Okay, hello everyone. This is John MacArthur, Peer Insight Moderator for Wikibon. We're joined today by members of the Wikibon analyst team, including Stu Miniman, Bert Lattimore, David Floyer, and many others in the Wikibon community. Thanks for joining us today. Today is April 10th, and we are here to discuss creating a zero data loss environment. Our guest today is Tim Hayes. He's the VP of IT at Animal Health International. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning.
You can hear it. Everybody can hear us okay, I hope. In addition to listening to the call, those who want to watch the live streaming video of the call, you can view it on siliconangle.tv. If you do watch it on SiliconANGLE TV and you're staying on the phone call, you might want to mute your SiliconANGLE TV, otherwise, because there's a couple second lag there. Just a couple other quick logistics here. If you are not speaking, please press star 6 to mute your line. And if you then want to ask a question, press star 6 again to unmute your line. This is an open call, so questions are welcome at any time, but I want to first give Tim an opportunity to introduce himself. And again, thank you, Tim, for joining us. Tim, why don't you kick it off for us and tell us a little bit about Animal Health International and your role there.
Sure, I would be happy to. It's nice to be with the group today talking about the Oxana solution. Animal Health International is a distribution company. We sell animal health products. We're an extension of the food business. We're an extension of the animal health industry. If anyone in the audience is familiar with McKesson or Cardinal Health or AmerisourceBergen and the role they play in human health, supplying hospitals, we play a similar role in animal health. Our customers are in the business of making protein, meat or dairy products, and we also service veterinarians that supply services to both large and small animal hospitals.
Okay, and can you just give us a little overview of your IT infrastructure and sort of your business model? I think you sell products online primarily, is that right? Or how do you sell?
Sure. So first question is, how do we sell? We have nearly every flavor of distribution that one could think of, everything from online order entry to traditional call center, send a brown box, to the what you might think of as a Snap-on tool truck model, where we have mobile inventory in box trucks that move around a route, and we service customers off of those trucks with a mobile store. We have about 120 retail locations at this point that we also sell across the counter. So a very diverse group of services from online order entry to traditional retail.
And I don't know, are you a public company or private company?
We are a private company.
Okay, so you probably don't release revenue, but can you give us an idea of the number of employees you have?
Sure. We have around 1,200 employees and over $1 billion in sales.
Okay, great. And so talk to us a little bit about your IT infrastructure and specifically what before you made the changes, what was the IT and disaster recovery environment like? How were you approaching disaster recovery?
Years ago, we had a replicated solution. Over the last year.
Tim, is that your background or is that somebody else?
It's someone else.
Okay, so just a reminder for those who aren't speaking, please press star 6 to mute your mic. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
That made it quiet.
A little better.
So we have been in a situation where we've had a replicated data center for a number of years. In 2009, we made the decision to implement SAP, and the company went through some rapid growth in the last 2.5 years. And as a result, we have outgrown our disaster recovery capability. At the moment, prior to the Oxana decision, we were running without a disaster recovery solution, a situation that we are quickly correcting. But the company has more than doubled its size in the last couple years. From an IT infrastructure standpoint, we run a hub and spoke model. We now have 120 locations that we service out of a Colorado data center. All of the services that can be consumed by these remote offices are distributed from the central data center. And when I say everything, I'm talking about voice, video, data, inventory, sales reporting, sales management, call center applications. All of our calls, as an example, are routed through the data center in a backhaul situation. So we are very much dependent on the data center, and so are our remote users. While we operate 120 offices, we have probably 75 additional people who work primarily from their home, and about 400 people who are mobile in a car or a truck all of the time.
Okay. So what were your goals with the disaster recovery solution?
Originally, our goal was to create an environment where we could recover to another building, another location, should the data center experience a large-scale disaster. We have gone to some length to protect for the normal or high probability event of a disaster, equipment failure with an N+1 configuration for most pieces of equipment in the data center, routers, switches, disks, et cetera. But that did not meet the criteria for a disaster recovery solution should the building burn down, experience a flood. Now, fortunately, we're in an area of the country that does not receive much adverse weather, at least in our particular location. So the risk is fairly low, but it's still there. And as our operations move to 24/7, it's become apparent that we need to expand our capabilities for disaster recovery.
So what's your approach then? What approach have you taken?
The approach will be to take all of the information that's replicated in a storage area network. We run a highly virtualized data center. Everything that can be virtualized is. So Windows, Linux, HPUX, SAP, ERP application are all virtualized on a SAN. If the big idea is if I can replicate that information from one SAN to another, my virtual VMDKs, all of the data associated with those servers, moves with it. So if I can replicate the information from one location to another, I can enable a pool of CPU and memory against that storage. I will have essentially replicated an entire data center. At this point, to give you an idea of the compactness of this solution, this is a multi-billion dollar company that will have its data center contained in a single rack.
And so how much data are you replicating between the sites?
We have around 200 terabytes of data that we are replicating.
And you're replicating it over what kind of a distance?
We will be replicating that over about a 60-mile distance. It's currently sitting in the data center, but eventually it will be replicating across a geo distance.
Okay. So, and at 60 miles?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So at 60 miles, it's tough to do synchronous replication, right?
Well, up until a short time ago, it was impossible.
So, what are you using? What will you be using to replicate the data across the 60 miles?
Sure. The original design for disaster recovery and the current design use EMC's product RecoverPoint. We use RecoverPoint to recover data between and sync data between two storage area networks.
Okay. And then, what's the change rate of data that you have there? I mean, how much new data are you creating every day?
I'm not sure how to quantify that. It's thousands of orders into our ERP system every day. I don't have a number for you on the amount of data that gets changed.
Yeah. All right. And then, how frequently are you doing the snapshots for between the on the recover point replication?
We have it set for a 15-minute lag.
15-minute lag. So in 15 minutes, you might have how many transactions?
Well, we do over $5 million a day through this data center, so could be hundreds to even 1,000.
Okay. And if you lost those transactions, how would you recreate them?
Well, prior to our synchronous I/O solution with Axena, they would be lost.
Okay. And so, with Axena, what do you tell us a little bit about how you're approaching that?
Well, it's a great story. We built the disaster recovery solution with an expectation that we could not afford synchronous I/O solution, plus the capacity, the complexity that it brought about. We said, no, it's not for us. We're going to live with a 30 to 40 minute data loss window. And we just accepted that fact, that there would be some amount of data that would be lost if we had a low probability major disaster in the data center. We, again, felt like we had taken care of the low probability events, but the high probability events of a natural disaster or something on that scale, we were totally unprotected against. When the Axena solution was presented to us, it became an immediate no-brainer to say, this is great insurance. The opportunity that we have now to protect this 30 to 40 minutes of data loss was the solution.
And have there been any other sort of benefits that come along with that kind of an approach? We talked earlier a little bit about before we started the call. We talked a little bit about application development and testing and your approach there.
Well, certainly the advantage of this type of solution allows you to replicate things that you may not have been able to replicate before and set up the replication at a more granular level. Prior to this, I don't think that we would have even considered replicating a development or a quality system to disaster recovery. But you think about that's one of your high-value workforces on a per-hour basis, so that their work is expensive as well, particularly if you have a development team working on projects. Now having the ability to replicate their work and protect it in a disaster is certainly an advantage.
So, John, I wonder if I could jump in. So, Stu, can you bring that slide back up? I think it'd be worth showing it again. So Stu's got a slide here that says disaster recovery alternatives. And David Floyer, it's a slide that you did way all the way back in 2008. And it's an XY graph, and it's on the horizontal axis is distance. On the left-hand side of the axis is limited distance, i.e. synchronous. On the right-hand side is unlimited distance,
XY,
you know, or asynchronous. On the vertical axis is the amount of data loss that's going to occur from you know, very very low to very high probability of no data loss. So some data loss at the bottom of the y-axis, you know, as close to zero data loss as possible, in the high end of the vertical axis. And it's basically, David, what you did is you plotted a bunch of different solutions: local backup and restore, which is the cheapest, so the most limited in terms of distance and some data loss, and then you got also off-site tape vaulting. And a number of other alternatives: server-based synchronous replication, continuous data protection, array-based asynchronous, all the way up to three-site, three-node data center replication, which is the most expensive and the least data loss.
Right.
So Axena is a bubble that fits right next to the three-node data loss, but is priced at the same, you know, roughly the same as an array-based replication solution.
Okay. asynchronous recognition.
Right.
Yeah.
So the point is you're achieving as close to zero data loss as possible at asynchronous distance, right?
That's right. That's the chart that we created then. And that was the year that Exana won the CTO award from Wikibon for innovation. And
the craziest solution ever conceived, but
yes.
By the way,
it focuses on data loss, and in the analysis that we've done, obviously data loss is difficult to cast out. But for many organizations, it's actually a higher loss value than just a loss of capability of taking orders. And it's obviously different for different organizations. But so this one focuses very, very clearly on zero data loss. Obviously, some of the other solutions allow a faster time to recover, so an RTO, which is slightly faster, but the Exana solution is certainly the premier solution for being able to have zero data loss at distance, and at any distance, essentially. So it's a fantastic piece of innovation.
So Tim, if I understand it, you had a recover point solution with a 15-minute RPO exposure, and then you dropped in an Exana solution, and that limited that exposure to essentially zero data loss at the same asynchronous distance. So you've got your data centers far enough away in case there's some catastrophic disaster at one, the other.
Lately in Colorado, I think it's brush fires.
Yeah.
Yeah, lately.
Yeah.
So,
well,
Tim, are we getting this right?
We've gone from a solution that was tape only, and it's as good as the backup you have at midnight the night before, to a recover point solution that narrows that window down considerably. At distance, you might be lucky to get, 30 minutes. That would be an ideal situation. You know, sitting in the same room, you can get down to maybe 15 minutes because bandwidth is less of a consideration. So in short order, we've gone from a tape solution to a zero point recovery solution.
Right. The tape would be around 12 hours, and the recovery situation you had with the snapshots would be in the order of probably altogether, an hour or something like that, just 45 minutes. So you've gone from 12 hours to 45 minutes to zero, essentially zero. There's nothing, no such thing as total zero, but it's as close to zero as anybody's going to get. Yeah.
Well, I think the other advantage, we keep talking about data loss, and that's extremely important, but recover point objectives are important, but what about the time to recover? With a tape solution or even a disk solution, the time to recover integrated solutions is not just about recovering the data.
No.
It's about reconnecting systems. Our system is so integrated at this point with other services that we provide, whether that's SharePoint or Exchange integration or virtual fax or e-commerce or web services that we offer to the customer, that the idea of trying to recover that in a traditional manner, whether from tape or disk or any other solution, is just mind-boggling. That our preference is to have two systems running simultaneously that could handle the business, so that we have not just a zero point of recovery, but also a near zero time to recover.
I think this is one of the biggest changes that's crept up on the IT world, is the interconnectedness of all of the applications and the fact that it's very, very difficult to tease them apart. What you think is a low priority application, you actually find in reality is it's integrated into some business process or other. So teasing apart the business processes and making piecemeal approach, you know, some pieces being very high availability and some are not, is increasingly difficult these days.
We had some of that discussion last week on our call, where someone was arguing that we should work more on classification, better classification of applications. And I think the point was made very strongly there that it's almost impossible to classify applications these days by business continuity requirements, because number one, you can't tell, it's hard to know in advance what's going to be involved in the business process. Number two, business processes are in constant state of flux. And so keeping the DR plans up to speed is really hard. And if you can take an approach like what Tim has done here and protect everything equally, then you don't have to worry about classification.
So, but essentially, Tim, you've dropped in this practically indestructible box that captures the 15-minute delta exposure that you have with recover point, and then in the event of a disaster, you're able to get your data out and then recover with virtually no data loss, correct?
Sure, and there's multiple ways to recover. If the wire is still good, you can move the data. I mean, Oxana acts as a big journal, right, moving transactions from production to disaster recover, and it deals off the bottom of the deck, taking the last and moving it to disaster recover, and it's always got that gap. And recovery becomes, do I have a data line? Yes, okay, then let's recover across the data line. I don't have a data line. Let's hook up a laptop, grab the log, grab that journal, run it down to the data center or fly it there. I can recover that way. Or if it's under a pile of rubble and I can't get to it, it has a phone built into it that can phone the data home.
And so you're in production with this system, is that right?
Yes.
And I presume, but maybe not, that you haven't had to endure a disaster at this point, but have you tested it, and how have you tested it? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. We put it through recovery paces. And tested all but the phone recovery solution. The reality was it worked as advertised. We were able to recover across the wire. We were able to recover across a laptop. Basically, with the virtual infrastructure that we have, it's pretty easy to snap a production environment, clone it, let it replicate, break the replication, and recover and fail back. The installation, I hate to oversimplify it, but within the recover point appliance, it's essentially a checkbox that says, do you have an Oxana solution? Yes. And the journal is enabled.
By the way, what's really interesting to me is that you were able to fail back, because failover is relatively simple. It's failing back, which is incredibly difficult in normal testing procedures. And that's very, very interesting to me, and I think to a lot of people it should be interesting that you can do that testing so simply.
Backups don't count, only recoveries.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but also in testing, it's one thing to test it, but quite another thing to be able to test it for real and then fail back again. So can you put a little color on that whole process? How long does it take, and your testing, how long does it take to set up? Could you put a little color on that?
Sure. We were able to install the solution and do the recovery testing in just a few days. We intend to run monthly recovery tests that follow. When we were completely dependent on tape for a number of years, of course, we ran a backup recovery test every month, because we just needed to be sure that we could actually recover it again. Backups don't count, only recoveries. And we have we've moved that into our monthly testing cycle. We don't actually recover production systems. We just recover copies of production systems. So, as an example, in SAP, we will create sandboxes of production environments for various testing purposes or training purposes, and that becomes our proving ground for the recovery solution as well.
You were talking a little bit about, you know, when the recovery system is close by, you can get to 15 minutes, but if it's further away, because of the cost of bandwidth or the size of the pipe, you're looking at more like 30 minutes. So can you give us some color on the impact on the cost of the communication costs between the two data centers?
Well, sure. When we were looking at a synchronous I/O solution, we were looking at $30,000-$40,000 a month in telecommunication charges to get the, you know, multi-gig or gig link that we would need in order to make that happen. Of course, with a synchronous I/O solution, and the write doesn't count until it's written in both locations. So you have a performance hit if you do not have the proper telecommunications. As a result of this solution, we were able to get back to a 50 meg MPLS circuit that handles our replication quite nicely. The cost of that is a few thousand dollars a month. So telecommunications alone can often pay for this type of a solution.
That's interesting.
This is Nathan. What technologies actually enable you to compress the data? Because if you're just journaling the data, you're still sending all of those writes across the site. Your circuit would still be the same unless you can do compression or something like that.
This is David. My understanding is that if you do it in real time, you are having to wait for the writes. Each write, and therefore you have to size the line for the maximum volume of writes that you have, and that's usually two, three, up to five times the average. In addition, if you lose any part of the circuit, you have to again size the line for whatever that loss is. If you're taking this type of approach, you can take an average, you can just drop the whole thing down. So it's not a question of compression, it's a question of being able to balance the line and hold that buffer of data safely for that period of time.
So the data is remaining at the local site, right? So you're guarding against... Okay.
You have a very, very... a highly protected small amount of data, which is just amazing to see. It's crush-proof, it's resistance-proof, it's bomb-proof, it's everything-proof. And you keep that small amount of data very, very, very safe and use that method of reducing the risk. And then you can extract that data in the event of an explosion or flood or fire or whatever it is. You can extract that data from this highly protected solid-state disk at the heart of all of this. It's sitting in the rack.
So it's essentially like an airplane black box encompassing the flash. It's not nuke-proof, but pretty much any other disaster-proof.
Well, why don't we open it up to the participants on the call? Anyone else have some questions for Tim today?
Yeah, or if people want to tweet, I'm at D. Vellante or at Wikibon. We're checking those streams.
This is Scott Lowe. I've got a question about costs. But you said you've moved your entire environment over to this solution, including production, development, the whole nine yards. Have you done a... sort of a financial analysis on what that means for you in the event of a disaster from a financial standpoint? I mean, is there a, especially when you're taking into consideration developer time and project time and, opportunity costs and things like that?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes in the sense that I could easily get to a number that would justify the expense of this solution. It's a little bit subjective to say. To me, I was able to look at the hardware requirements of a synchronous I/O solution add to that the cost of the telecommunications solution to get to a synchronous I/O solution, and just, you know, shook my head and said, you know, we cannot get there. So we were stuck with an asynchronous I/O solution. And again, any money you spend on a DR solution is really just insurance. You hope your lottery ticket of life doesn't get punched and that you need to exercise it. But if you do, you sure are happy to have it there. And as insurance, you're trying to keep those costs as low as possible. And so here we have an opportunity to expand on our asynchronous I/O solution to get us closer to a zero data loss recovery of synchronous I/O. And for me, it was simple math to say, when I look at the alternatives, this is a no-brainer.
I might be missing something here, but when you talk about this black box that's local in the data center, if there's a localized disaster like a tornado or something like that, am I missing something where I'm not sure how to get to zero data loss if everything's not being replicated through a second environment somewhere, or is it? They have missed something, but I haven't heard that yet.
So you have your primary system, and you have the Oxana black box data recorder sitting in your primary data center, and a secondary site with replicated data. And so if you add the data that's in the disaster recovery site plus the Oxana box, you have all of your rights.
Okay. So it's not necessarily real time. If a tornado hits that primary data center, there could be a period of time where the data is not quite synced yet.
Right. But you would have, because of RecoverPoint, you would have a bootable system, right? You would have an application consistent copy of the data that might be 15, 30 to 30 minutes old, which would be bootable, and you could recover the transaction.
But I think that was Floyer's point about RTO.
Right.
But Josh, you had a comment? I thought I heard you on there.
Is there something that was not discussed? Is data consistency, which is maybe the most important issue in disaster recovery.
Right.
If you don't have data consistency, you have to go back to backups and to start with backups. And I know a bank who took them 3 days to return back because of data inconsistency. Now, in costs, synchronous remote copy, for example, there is a one issue that I normally recommend users to keep two copies of data on the recovery site. And the reason is, if you have disconnect on the lines during synchronous remote copy, and then the line became available again, the primary will resync to secondary, but he will not resync according to the time. He will resync according to the LAN numbers. And you have disaster at that time, you have guaranteed inconsistent data on the recovery. Therefore, in this case, if you have this connection, what you have to do, you have to copy the data on the secondary to seconds, to golden copy, which of course also increases the cost. Now, in asynchronous, is not so much important because the consistency, because you are sending packets, and if there is interruption in the middle of this block of data, then normally the secondary will not acknowledged that there was. So you have consistent data on the recovery side. However, this is all true if I speak about one subsystem on to another subsystem on the recovery side. You have multiple storage subsystem. You have to resynchronize between them or to keep consistency between them. And this is only possible on high-end storage. There is no single mid-range storage which you can make consistency between subsystems.
With RecoverPoint, Tim, are you able to create application consistent snapshots of the data?
No.
Tim?
I'm not sure that that's the point of this gentleman, but we are able to take those snapshots and of the applications. There is a data sync, but not a time sync.
Okay.
I just wanted to point out, as it relates to the this question that Scott Lowe had, again, Floyer, way back in 2009, did an economic value of the Xtana zero data loss, and he compared it, interestingly enough, to tape. Tim, so you can probably access this and show your management what a great deal you got. But it's called the economic value of Xtana zero data loss solution. And Stu, you got a couple of charts there. It shows, makes assumptions around. There's the bank. We did a case study with the bank, size of the bank, makes an assumption about the cost of downtime. That's where the benefits comes from. And then the cost piece, you can see. I mean, obviously, async is going to dramatically reduce the communication lines cost, where a lot of this benefit comes from. So take a look at that if you're interested, and call Floyer if you got any questions.
Yeah, and I think it's one thing to talk about what banks might do. You know, I came out of banking a lot of years at State Street Bank. But the kinds of solutions that a bank custodian for, at the time, $5 to $10 trillion in assets, I don't know where it is today, not the same kind of, you got a different kind of budget, you know, than a company like Animal Health and Nutrition. So I think the triple site data replication, the controller-based synchronous replication.
They can afford that.
With that price, yeah, but your average, 1,000 employee, 2,000 employee company that's selling product, not bits. It's a difficult thing to afford.
So is that where you see this fit? Is giving those, again, that mid-sized company a large size company data loss, zero data loss capability? It's like little guys going to the cloud and getting great.
It's better than the cloud because you can test it all the time.
That point being, the analogy being a lot of small, mid-sized companies are getting data center capabilities, roughly comparable to large multinational.
Well, answering the question about banking, the tendency in banking, in particular in the United States, is to go to the three data center.
Absolutely. Right.
When there is primary data center, the secondary data center is in synchronous distance, and with synchronous replication. And the third data center is longer distance, at least 200 kilometers, with asynchronous remote copy.
Sure. But your average mid-sized company is not going to afford a solution like that.
No, of course not. I don't know.
Tim, you looked at that, right? And basically, your management said, that wasn't something that you were gonna pay for, right?
Well, absolutely. We plotted out a synchronous I/O solution with EMC tools, and that wasn't even a case I was willing to present.
Yeah. When you replicate data over distance, and I don't know, how much conditioning you have to put on the line or whatever to have a reliable link, but the links sometimes go down. One of the things I hear a lot about is link failures. Can you talk about that?
Sure, that happens occasionally, and that's one of the nice things about this solution is that those journals just keep happening until that line recovers.
What's a typical outage for a link failure?
Could be anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours.
Yeah, and you've got enough buffer in there to cover 2 hours of change data?
I believe so.
Yeah.
To answer...
One of the huge advantages of this approach is the automation with RecoverPoint. So, and the reason it can be certain that it can recover is because of this local buffer that's safe. It's an automated system, and it's gives a similar level of protection with much cheaper equipment and much cheaper lines as the banks have had, and gives consistent data. So I think it's an amazing solution, and the only surprise to me is the slowness of the market accepting it. It's been, as you said, pointed out, these are things that I wrote about in 2008, 2009, and it seems to have been sad that it hasn't been pushed more strongly.
If I can return to the questions, if we can afford or who can afford, the normal sequence of planning business continuity is the first thing is to perform business impact analysis.
Right.
To know what does it mean for you to lose data, what does it mean for you not to be online for 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, whatever. And it is, of course, different for every organization. The second step is perform risk impact analysis, which means in your location, what are the risks? The weather, the earthquake, your neighbor is a chemical company or whatever. The third one after that is the RTO. What is the recovery time objective? And this should be done based on the business impact analysis. RPO, and the last one is the NRO, which is network recovery objective. So, and this should be done basically before that, and this should be done together with the business, because they have to understand what does it mean to lose the data and how much they cost to prevent that.
So Josh, can I just clarify what you said? You said first business impact analysis, second a risk impact analysis, then you said
risk impact. Yeah, the third one is RTO.
Yeah, and then NRO.
Then RPO.
RTO and RPO third, based on the business impact.
Yeah, you can make both of them the same level, and then you have to check the network recovery objective,
right.
Because normally in disaster the longest time to recover is the network.
And in the case of animal health, you've got networks to support all your branches, you've got networks to support your remote workers, your mobile workers, and so there's a lot of
So Tim, is that sort of the way you approached it, or did you have a different?
No, absolutely. Josh is exactly right. In the pieces that I wrote, you can see that process is followed, and you can see some of the calculations based on that process. The NRO. In this particular case, was folded in but it was a very, very significant part of the cost of the synchronous lines was the NRO. I mean that has a very big impact on the cost and the RPO with the traditional solutions.
So Tim Hayes, what about that? Is that the process that you went through, or did you have a different methodology?
Well, that's a fine process to go through. I tell you, I didn't take all of those steps. We knew that we needed to have a solution that would do this. We've always tried to keep things from an infrastructure standpoint as simple as possible to make it easy on my team to maintain, so we don't end up with a lot of unmaintained IT debt. And I was not required to go through those steps. We have on our own, identified those systems that are, important to recover. But it doesn't take you long to get to the point where it's just a futile exercise. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you've got a workflow process that says someone in a remote office is going to scan their The latest invoice from a vendor, the trash company, you know, brings around an invoice every month, and they scan it in, and that's part of a workflow that gets kicked off, and that requires SAP Exchange, the imaging software, all to work. You just can't have one system working. You get to the point where they all have to work. And when you're in a situation where all the systems have to work or business stops, you can try to identify the ones that that you need to have, or you can say, well, what would it take to have all of the systems up all of the time? And that's the approach that we started with.
Yeah, we should broadcast that last statement far and wide. That's absolutely true, and there's a lot of misconception in the IT and indeed in the consulting world about the ability to break out key systems. So I think that's absolutely right.
This conversation reminds me a little bit of the difference between a consultant and somebody who's in the field doing the work. So I was reading on Disaster Recovery Journal's blog site today, business impact analysis. You do the business impact analysis, and then you present the bill for the solution to that business impact analysis, and 90% of organizations can't afford it because they're not a large commercial bank. So I think I appreciate the real life experience of Tim.
Well, it sounds like you took a practical approach. You knew you needed it. You weren't breaking the bank. You justified it in essentially showing your management that without this, we're exposed. So here's a cost-effective way to approach it.
Yeah, again, I guess the way I look at it is it's insurance. You have to have it. You want to have it. You want to have as much insurance as you possibly can at a price that you can afford.
Right. So any other comments from the community here? Questions? Anybody else? No? Okay. Well, Tim, I very much appreciate your time, your perspectives today. Go ahead.
Any last question for me, Tim? Is any advice you would give to your peers if they're thinking about doing this? Anything you might do differently if you had to do it over again? Maybe just final thoughts there.
Well, things have gone so well, it's very difficult to think of something that I would do differently. I guess the last advice would be is don't write this solution off. Consider it as part of the evaluation of either current operations or future operations as related to disaster recovery. If you have a synchronous IO solution in place, you may look at this as an opportunity to trim costs. If you do not, you might look at this as an opportunity to gain that type of solution on a budget.
Yeah, so I guess there are probably three constituents out there. There are those people who don't really have a disaster recovery scenario, you know, don't really have a disaster recovery solution because they haven't been able to afford it. Number two, those people who've got something but they are looking to reduce the cost, right? And then the third is those people who've got something but are looking to enhance it to make it more practical.
Yeah, I think somewhere in there, if you've got something as expensive as a 3 data site solution, you can't just roll in applications at will.
No, you
it's
can't.
It's too expensive.
That's right.
Right. So you want to confine that infrastructure to those that can justify it.
Right. And that's an interesting point. When you take that very expensive sort of approach, then you do get sort of driven to that, okay, let's classify what we mean by a critical application. So, you know, you restore certain things, but then 80% of the business process isn't restored, but the core application is. The accounting system's restored, the order entry system's restored, but none of the customer service stuff, because it's just not affordable.
Well, this has always struck me as a quote-unquote poor man's three-site data center with better RPO.
and that's an interesting point. It's also protection against disasters, and frankly, two data centers in close proximity, you're not protected. Now, again, those are relatively unlikely events, as Tim was saying, you know?
What's that mean? Once every 10 years? Once every 15?
Every 10, every 15, maybe every, you know, the storm of the century, whatever, but you've got...
Time keeps ticking.
Time. That's right. And so, if you've got all of the uncommitted deltas in a large black box, you've got the chance of back on, you know, RTO zero. You know, under scenarios where you wouldn't otherwise.
I've always said I never would have thought of this, but I'm glad somebody did.
Well, again, Tim, I appreciate your time. I'd love to invite you back again for an update at some future point. You can tell us sort of what's status of progress and results and things like that. How you're growing. Thanks to everyone who participated today. Tim, appreciate your perspective. As a reminder, this is John MacArthur. Today's Tuesday, March 20th. It's April 10th. And time of today's call is Zero Data Loss Disaster Recovery. Our guest is Tim Hayes, VP of IT at Animal Health International. Thanks, David Floyers, Stu Miniman on camera, Josh Kirscher for your questions. Scott, Nathan, whoever you are, thank you for your questions. Appreciate it. We will have 6 research notes out and available over the course of the next couple of days based upon some of the insights from today's call. Just as a reminder, we will have another Peer Insight next Tuesday, the 17th, when Gary Lamb, the CTO of NextCloud, is going to be talking about achieving maximum VM density for high-performance apps in virtualized environments. So, Tim, you might want to dial back in since you've got everything in one rack. We can have some conversations about high-performance applications in highly virtualized environments. Sounds like you've got some perspective there yourself.
I sure do. Be happy to help.
Great. Well, have a great day, and thanks everyone for dialing in. And hope to speak to you all again soon. Thanks.